Have you ever thought about the science behind astrology? It's more than what the future is all about. It's time for a visit with Andrea Gertz, astrological detective. This hour includes astrological predictions, personal stories, and some crazy experiments. Get ready for a unique ride. Now, here's Andrea Gertz.
Good morning and welcome to a very surprising show of The Astrological Detective, where we are going to do the last show. So that's kind of a surprise if any of you didn't know that. But I'm not surprised. Hey, I have very exciting guests with me. One of my favorite astrologers in the world, real. Nick Dagenbest, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you, Andy. I do not know how to respond to such an introduction.
Well, you want to know why I say that?
I'd love to know.
Well, I'll just work my little PDA for you in here. But really, when I met you, you were one of the astrologers who I felt like rivaled the number of charts I could hold in my head. Like, how many charts do you think you have in your head?
It's definitely hundreds. It might be thousands, but I wouldn't want to exaggerate.
Well, aren't you known as the human ephemeris?
I am known as the human ephemeris. You know why I'm known as the human ephemeris?
Because you look like a book? No, I'm just
kidding. Because I've told people to call me that. No.
That's a surprise to me.
Yes. I do have, for the listeners who don't know, The Ephemeris is a book that astrologers use. It's a book full of symbols and numbers, and it basically tells you the planetary position for every planet for every day of a given century. So you can get a whole book on the 20th century, and it's like a astrological calendar. And I've got the 20th century version memorized and the 19th century version more or less memorized. I'm getting there with the 19th century. And the 21st.
As you're talking, I'm sitting over here just like my astral heart is exploding. You know as an astrologer, as an astrologer, it's very hard to find people who speak your language, like really speak it, you know?
Yes.
And know it. And when you find people who do, it's like how you like find you're a French person, you're like living in, I don't know, Dubai, and then you meet somebody who speaks French and you're like, you know, it's like that's how I feel when I talk with people like you, where we can really get into the meat of stuff.
We really are truly like two French people in Dubai.
And people are like, God, listen to them. It's so annoying.
I can't think of anything that describes us better than that.
But so, okay, wait. Let's go back to the first time. I'm trying to think of the first time we met.
August 2006, Cumberland, Maryland.
Is that when we met? Because I feel like we met before that, maybe. But Cumberland
possibly,
is where we...
Possibly. If the only other place we could have met possibly was Seattle in May of 2005. But I don't think so. I don't think you were at that NORWAC. I think I first met you in August 2006.
Yeah, and I was I sick when you met me?
Yes, you were. You were. Yeah.
I'm sick. But, yeah. Oh, man.
But you also... This is the amazing... Andrea Gertz in a nutshell. She was sick. She was in a foreign town, surrounded by strangers, and she still managed to produce a whole movie over the course of 1 week on this visit. You achieved more than anyone did in those 7 days. And you weren't even at your 100%. That's amazing right there.
Well, you know, I loved Ellen so much that she inspired me to make this movie because, the whole experience was very interesting but it was like, I felt inspired to document it because everyone was so interesting, basically. But we should resurrect that movie. That was a week. That was an interesting and exciting and memorable week.
It's the kind of week that they will someday write operas about.
Yes!
Because it was, for people who don't know what we're talking about, it's getting a little too inside here. This was the Project Hindsight Conclave of 2006. And it was the first time that I met a lot of people that I now consider to be close associates in the astrology world. Along with you, that was the first time I met Austin Coppock. It's probably the first time you met Austin Coppock.
Yes.
Of course, the delightful Wonder Bright was there, Ken Miller. I remember you and Ken Miller texting each other constantly during all the lectures, like two nice students. I can just imagine how the two of you behaved at Kepler. This was the first time I met a lot of people who I remain close to. And
I have a question for you.
Okay, go, go.
Have I ever surprised you?
Have you ever surprised me? I saw you, the last time you and I saw each other in person was just a few months ago in New Orleans. We saw each other in May, and you looked totally different. You know, it's a funny thing. When I was a kid reading Superman comics, I used to think, what a stupid disguise Clark Kent has. He puts on a pair of glasses and no one can figure out who he is. And you, like, you're the living proof. No, actually, the Clark Kent disguise is really good because you showed up in New Orleans without glasses. And I was like, who's this superwoman? What happened to Clark and Andrea Gertz? That's a surprise right there.
Well, and the reason I ask is because, you know, we're talking about Uranus today, and I would say that that's kind of what Uranus is all about.
Kind of. It's certainly how it gets, how it is often described right. amongst astrologers, certainly when they're trying to find a couple of handy adjectives to offer to a client during a reading. It's the kind of term that'll come up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Uranus is really so much about surprises, but it certainly does. It certainly does produce surprises. I'd say that gets a little closer to the planet.
Yeah. So just before we go on, I want everyone to know that the reason that Nick Dagenbest is on talking about Uranus, I like that that way of pronouncing it. Anyways. It doesn't have urine or Uranus in it. It's just Uranus. Anyway, so
it is of all the planets to have that sort of scatological double entendre. It's actually very appropriate astrologically that it's Uranus that does.
I know, right?
That's the beauty of it. That even the little 7-year old humor, you know, sort of fits into the whole astrological.
Significations.
Yeah.
So before we go on, you and I talked about how we wanted to also make a little shout out for Jack Furtig. But first I want to say that, complete this thought, which is one of the things about, Nick that's so awesome is that, you know, talk about producing things and doing accomplishments. You have a book that's about to come out on Uranus, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm getting close to being done. I sent you some artwork samples just
it's beautiful. Really, I mean, no, seriously, I'm a bookmaker now. You know, I've made books, and it's like, to me, books are a great art form. And the pages, the visual images, did you design those?
Yeah, I did them all.
Wow, awesome.
For the listeners who don't know what we're talking about, I'm doing a storybook related to Uranus. It's called What's Up, Uranus? Which has been a shout out to Bugs Bunny, who alongside...
I call it What's Up, Uranus, but whatever.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Bugs Bunny alongside Jack Furtig is one of the great Americans, I'd say. And so there's a little bit of that of him in there. And it's sort of, yeah, well, the book is written in such a way that if you wanted, you could read it to yourself in his voice. You know, Warner Brothers can copyright everything about Bugs Bunny except the suggestion by an author that readers read his novel as if it were being narrated by Bugs. So the artwork that we're talking about, the book is kind of, I'm trying to pass it off as a graphic novel in a sense. I guess it's more of a storybook than an actual graphic novel. But
the graphics were amazing. I mean, really, and I'm not just saying that. When I looked at them, I was like, oh, this is awesome. And so now it makes sense that you're telling me your concept.
Yeah. The idea is that sort of an illustrated storybook about different Uranus transits that in the lives of about 200 to 300 famous people. I'm in the process of editing it, but it could be as many as 300 in the book. But that is getting kind of big and unwieldy, so I'm probably going to cut some out. Right. So it's the transit of the planet Uranus making conjunctions or oppositions to the natal suns and moons of all kinds of famous people.
Yeah.
The kind of book that has, you know, Queen Victoria, but it also has Paris Hilton.
That's awesome. And that's one of your fortes is I really feel like you look at the gamut, the whole gamut of people. You know, you're not just looking at one kind of person as an astrologer. I really appreciate that about your work, you know. I know that what I've learned from you is from a large scope of research. It's not, you know, you have the ability to hold a lot of information mentally and you know, it's nice. Before we go, let us do make shout out to Jack Furtick. To anyone who doesn't know, Jack Furtick was a wonderful astrologer and a beautiful man. And I talked to him at UAC. Did you talk to him?
Yeah.
I had a beautiful conversation about his partner and how much he loved him. And it was just, he's beautiful.
We talked about old Hollywood movies. Jack was amazing in so many ways, but he was also a walking encyclopedia on old Hollywood lore. And I'm also something of a you know, movie buff. So I have to say, very impressed, alongside with everything else that Jack had going for him. You know, just on a side note, he really, really knew his old Hollywood. He knew a lot about a lot of things, really.
Yeah, and his aura was very, I don't know, to me, very pure. He was a very, you know, he's out there performer, but like he had a lot of love in his heart. And so I'm going to sing a little bit of Hallelujah before we go to the break, just to like, you know, just solidify like his transition as a good thing, you know. So here we go. I'm not a good singer, but this is about, you know, soul. Okay, don't judge me. Here we go. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Okay, that's all I can do. But I love Jack Furtick, and I just want to say thank you for everything you did while you were here, Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
You definitely made an impression on a lot of people. All right, we're going to go to break, and then we're going to get back here with the meat of Uranus. Soon.
The Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
Tune in to the Empowered Healer Show with Dr. Susan Allison. Our program will help you to heal yourself, support those around you, and enhance your work and your relationships. Healing can be physical, emotional, or spiritual, and it can be personal or collective for the healing of our planet. Dr. Allison and her guests will offer methods of healing that will go beyond your life and reach the lives of others. Tune in to the Empowered Healer Show. Airing live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
There's a course offered on 7th Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, 7th Wave Network.
Are you feeling out of control? Are bad relationships, anger, depression, and lifestyle overwhelming you? You can choose to release the belief systems that have kept women stuck for years. Tune in to The Power of an Unstoppable Woman with Dr. Rose Backman as your host. Break free from the genetic beliefs that can cause sabotage. It's time to stand up for who you are and what you believe in, no matter what. Listen every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
The Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Be extraordinary. Be the change.
You're enjoying Andrea Gerrit's Astrological Detective. Got a question or comment? Maybe a story to share? Call in to 1-866-472-5795. Again, that's 1-866-472-5795. Or send an email to theastrologicaldetective@gmail.com. Now, on with the show.
Surprise! It's the Uranus Show.
Oh my God!
Hey, Nick, you want to know what earrings I'm wearing for the Uranus Show?
I'd love to know what earrings you're wearing.
I'm wearing one big white ball, one big purple ball, one star, and one tiny ball.
Wow.
Do you see a pattern there?
Well, that's one more ball than I'm wearing, but aside from that, no.
It's just kind of chaotic. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay. I see. All right.
Yeah. So what words would you use to describe your anus?
Believe it or not, the word I would use more than any other is pervert. But I don't mean some like creepy naked guy in an overcoat, you know, on a street corner. I mean something that sort of corrupts the essential values of something. In this case, the values associated with science. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. The book I'm doing examines the transit of Uranus through the 12 tropical signs. And whenever it enters a sign, it sort of corrupts the values generally associated with that sign. For instance, in the 1960s, right when Uranus entered the sign of Virgo, well, Virgo is a sign of, amongst other things, discriminating taste, good taste, high culture. You know, Uranus likes the Dutch masters for painters and maybe, you know, Mozart and Bach as composers. And, for literature, it's going to go.
Virgo?
Virgo, yes.
Okay, you said you're
Virgo,
right.
Virgo wants the best of everything. Did I say a different sign? I didn't mean to.
Yeah,
I meant to
say. You're talking about Uranus. It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, when Uranus went into Virgo in the 1960s.
Yeah.
So what happened at that point is all of a sudden when Uranus went into Virgo, you had Andy Warhol's silk screens of Marilyn Monroe became the art of the day. Marvel comics became the literature of the day. And Lennon and McCartney songs became the great music of the day. In other words, while Virgo has an attraction to sort of culture as this sort of elevated and you know, precious sort of thing, all of a sudden art was becoming pop. You know, something that is sort of contrary to Virgo's usual values. And that's what the entrance of Uranus to Virgo heralded, was sort of these values being turned upside down and something sort of radical happening to them.
That is such a good description. I mean, I just have to butt in here and say, I love having this show because I have learned so much from my fellow colleagues and stuff. Like, I would never use the word pervert to describe Uranus, but when you're talking about it, and when I think of things happening, you're totally right. You know, like I just had I'm in a huge Uranus transit right now, and it is, you know, disintegrating or collapsing the structures of that planet in my life, you know, and, right. And taking the traditional values and like tossing them out in a way.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's really astute. So what about Uranus and Scorpio?
Well, that was an interesting time. The last time we had Uranus in Scorpio was from about 1975 until about 1981. That was I think a time when, I mean, in some sense it had to do with things like Studio 54 and disco. Whereas Scorpio is a sign that is about a very sort of deep but somewhat hidden sexuality, not not overt, not demonstrative, something that lingers sort of deep in the soul. The Uranus and Scorpio period, though, was very sort of celebratory. It was very sort of putting things out there, taking that really deep hidden stuff and just putting it all out on display. Sort of everything goes kind of manner, taking that sort of that sexual energy and in some sense robbing the mystery out of it. But
so do you hear that banging? You hear that banging from where you're at?
Vaguely.
That's Angeline trying to get up here. I just want you to know it's really hilarious. It's as a mom, I'm like trying to be like, what do I do about this kid banging?
You can't do anything about they rule the.
Here, everyone on the radio, it's the Uranus Show. We have a surprise visitor. Hold on. Hey, Angeline, open the door. So other than pervert, what other words would you use to describe kind of how Uranus feels as it when it was going over someone's sun or opposed the sun in your book?
Well, that's the thing. The thing about the book is because there are so many examples – it really sort of challenges the relatively narrow a field of associations we give to Uranus. You know, your average astrologer, well, I hate to use a phrase like average astrologer. A standard astrological treatment of Uranus is to come up with, say, 10 to 20 what we would call keywords.
Right.
That sort of serve as handy little adjectives and allow us to get across a sort of what we see as being the nature of the planet. It's a very handy tool when you're learning astrology, but eventually it becomes something of a crutch.
Yeah.
So in some ways, the Uranus book is a challenge to the astrological community to sort of, you know, one way, on the one hand, sort of disabuse them of sort of clinging to a handy keywords, but at the same time, sort of reinforce, like, what is, if this all can be sort of summed up in some way, what exactly is that? You know, how would we summarize it? And I think ultimately the it's almost the fewer keywords the better. We almost overdo the keywords.
Right.
This idea of it perverting the sign and getting more of getting more of our delineation of Uranus out of the sort of the symbolism behind the sign, rather than laying it all on Uranus's feet, you know. In other words, Uranus being the sort of perverting agent that roams the zodiac. It's sort of like,
yeah, like it's an end. Well, not an enzyme, but you know what I mean. It's like when there's an influence by Uranus in some area of the life, that it will facilitate kind of. It's almost like, I don't want to say proteins folding, because that's, I think, more of that, like, Pluto, but it's like, it facilitates that. I mean, I don't know. I'm almost thinking, like, if let's say Uranus is in Scorpio, right? That generation is going to get a lot of, I don't know what Uranus feels like to me. Do you mind if I speak to that for a sec when it, like, transits parts of my chart?
Please do.
It feels like, well, there's twitching. There's, like, oversynaptic activity. In one part, like, I'll get, like, for example, Uranus is in Aries right now, right?
Right.
And it's like, I feel like twitching, because I can feel the energies really strongly. It's like I feel twitching in my head, my temples, my, you know, it's like the brain is incited or something.
Well, that might be an aneurysm. I hope not.
Well, that would be a Uranian health problem. Definitely takes you by surprise.
Tell you how I think Uranus is perverting Aries right now.
Yeah, tell me.
The same way it did it back in the 1930s, last time it was in Aries, and also back in the 1840s. And that is basically the Occupy movement was one of the most distinctly Uranus in Aries. And the reason being that Aries, while Aries is very much a sort of a champion for the weak kind of sign, that's the part of the Aries value we see in the Occupy movement. The thing that perverts the value is that Aries is very individualistic. And whenever Uranus moves into Aries, it's one of the most effective times of when people function as collectives, as unions, which is very much contrary to what Aries values. It's almost like people behaving as an individual. This has been true in the Occupy movement and all the sort of the Arab Spring and everything we've seen happen just in the brief time that Uranus has already been in Aries, because it's only been there a little over, what, a year and a half, 2 years or so. But if you go back to the 1930s, a lot of the union movements, that was when they really started to take hold during the Depression. Or if you go back to 1840s and if you know about sort of how the world, especially in Europe, turned upside down in 1848. It's very much, people were acting very much in the same manner as they have been lately. That's what's going on now.
And for everyone who's listening and doesn't know this, Uranus is also what we call in a square to Pluto right now, meaning they're 90 degrees apart.
Yes.
And that's huge for people. I mean, as an astrologer doing readings at this point in time, it's stressful for people. Do you find that? Pluto and Capricorn is like, there's an intense focus on institutions and, you know, systems of ranking, you know, social security, all kinds of systems.
Pluto's a very slow planet. It takes a long time to run the zodiac. And just so your listeners understand, the last time Pluto was in Capricorn was the period of the American Revolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, it's sort of a big sort of cyclical return to that kind of social phenomena whereby, you know, really well-established institutions are standing on the shakiest ground, and there's the greatest potential for things to sort of be started over from scratch in many ways. Yep.
So I think that's where we're seeing a lot of the, you know, perverting of things is perverting of institutions that we thought were just going to be there forever because of people's need for individual freedom, which is the Uranus and Aries thing. People are kind of carving out their own positions and work. There's a lot of more people who are self-employed kind of having to be with the certain, you know, getting laid off and whatever.
Yeah.
It's really, we have to go to break, but when we come back, hopefully we'll have someone from the digital bindery calling in, because I want to ask you this. Do you think, and you can say no, but do you think Uranus is connected with technology?
Yes. It very much, a certain kind of technology.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't just say technology, but at the same time, yes, very much.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a few. We're continuing on with Nick Dagenbest on Uranus. See you in a few. I'm going to check with Angelina real quick.
Hey, cutie. Do you need anything? I have a minute break. Do you need any advice or anything? No? Do you want to say hi to my guest, Nick?
I can hear you now.
This is the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. What are the benefits to combining modern science with ancient healing practices? For the answers, you'll want to tune into Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. Each week, our program focuses on ways to live more holistically. By developing new ways of looking at our world, we can find ways to foster harmony and peace for the good of mankind and our planet. If we learn to live and think healthier, we begin to explore and focus on our strengths. Tune into Frame of Mind, Saturdays at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on 7th Wave Network.
We all want peace. We all desire a more meaningful life. We work hard to achieve these things, but at what avail? The key is authentic living with Andrea Matthews. Andrea will interview some of the great spiritual experts of today and will provide wisdom to help you raise your consciousness to the level of your own I Am. Your authenticity can give you miraculous gifts, but you have to know how to get there. Listen for Authentic Living with Andrea Matthews. Heard live every Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the 7th Wave Network. Ask Theo Live is talk radio like you've never heard before. Following her near-death experience, world-renowned author and spiritual medium Sheila Gillette became the direct voice channel for Theo, a consortium of 12 archangels. Through this unique channel, Sheila and her co-host Marcus Gillette present you with an opportunity to speak directly with Theo live on air on any topic you wish to discuss, including receiving authentic messages from deceased loved ones and angelic guides. Get the answer you need by tuning in to Ask Theo Live talk radio. Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on 7th Wave Network.
Be visionary. This is the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
You're enjoying Andrea Gerrit's Astrological Detective. Got a question or comment? Maybe a story to share? Call in to 1-866-472-5795. Again, that's 1-866-472-5795. Or send an email to theastrologicaldetective@gmail.com. Now, on with the show.
Good morning, and welcome back to the Arena Show. We're supposed to have a caller in this segment. Her name's Amanda from the Digital Bindery. I don't know that she's called, or maybe, I don't know. Is she there? Sound guy Justin? Do I have a caller? I guess that's a no. Well, let's talk about the digital binder. Can I tell you what it is, Nick?
Please do.
Well, it's okay. So, you know, I've been thinking, should I, people are like, oh, you should put Vettius Valens on an ebook. And I'm like, but it's a 2000-year-old text and I don't want to degrade it. And then I found out about the digital bindery, and what they do is they basically quote unquote bind books into the digital format. So, hey, you were saying that Uranus is about technology, some kinds. Which kinds do you think?
Modern technology. Because okay. Remember, technology is also, hammers, nails, saws, knives. Wow. So there's a lot of technology that isn't Uranian at all. Some technology is Martian, some is Mercurial. But Uranus Uranus heralds the Industrial Revolution or at least the earliest parts of it. And the modern world, the discovery of Uranus coincided with the end of the American Revolution. So politically, it's had a lot to do with what the creation of the United States meant in a geopolitical fashion. But with the creation of the United States, you also get the means for a lot of new scientific discoveries, technological discoveries.
Hey, Nick, so you're saying it's like the technology of quick-moving new ideas.
Yes, yes, yes. So very much modern technology and not standard ancient technology.
We have Amanda, I think, on the line. Amanda, are you here?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Yay.
How do you feel around astrologers in general, Amanda? Just kidding.
I try not to make them nervous.
I know. Hey, no, Amanda is awesome. Everyone at the Digital Bindery, Nick, you would love them. They're kind of the artist, awesome type.
We try our best to be in touch with our artistic side.
Yeah.
Get overrun by technology.
Right, because that's important for what you do. I mean, you guys are very up on all the quick-changing technology, but you try to focus on the art of the books themselves. Is that true?
Yeah, that's kind of how we started with, we were in, my partner Tom and I, we were in a publishing program and working as publishing people in the book world, and we loved it, and we also really liked technology, so we started looking at these ebooks, and they were so gross and hard to read, and it was sad. So we decided that we were going to try to bring some of those principles that have been around since the monks were writing their illuminated manuscripts and try to bring those principles that we know about back into the technology. So that's awesome. Kind of what we do.
When Nick and I were on the break, we were talking about how Nick is making this graphic novel and how he was a little concerned that if he put it on ebook, that it wouldn't look good.
Yeah, that's a good thing to be concerned about because they can come out terrible. But now with technology advancing so quickly and people being able to read on tablets and all kinds of different screen types, bringing back the visual element is possible as long as, care is taken to make sure that it is presented well.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Hey, you might be hearing from me, Amanda. It's very likely.
Awesome. Well, when I asked Amanda on the show, or people from the Digital Bindery in general, the reason was is because Nick's on the show, and he's just published his book, and he's amazing. He's the human ephemeris, Amanda. I mean, this guy's the real thing. So,
okay. Well, we'll take care of him.
but astrologers in general really are prone to writing their own works just because astrology is an oppressed study, and so it's hard to get publishers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was thinking about astrologers and ebooks and the whys, and it seems like, and I could be totally off base, but it seems like the whole point is to make connections and reach other people and develop a supportive community of humans, and that seems to be something that ebooks can do so well. You have the lower production costs and no shipping costs and those kinds of things, so you're able to produce these works and get it out to the people that need it in a timely manner and, all those things. So it seems like the right thing,
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because when I went to the Right to Publish conference, one thing I learned is that one cool thing about the ebook is you can respond to the wave of need. Like, if you're doing a print book, sometimes it takes 2 years to get it to publish. But with an ebook, it can be more fast. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, there are two kind of aspects to that sort of urgent sense. And one is that you can get the book out there quickly. If you decide that you need to make a change or an addition, you can change the files that minute, you know, and then it's available to everyone right away. The other side of that is from the reader's side, when they need something, they can find it immediately. They could be at the dentist's office and suddenly need something, some information or something, and they can get it. So they're both sides of that coin, that immediacy from the e-book.
It's very Iranian, wouldn't you say, Nick?
Yes. Yeah. Very much. Very, very much.
For you,
the
Amanda.
Instant part of it.
Right.
I'm sorry,
Amanda,
what?
Amanda, what's your sign?
I'm a Leo.
Ooh.
You're surrounded by them, Mandy. You're surrounded by them.
Oh, I know. I was going to ask if you had some Leo in your chart, Nick, because you're such a good entertainer. Hey, Amanda, can people get ebooks through the library?
Yeah, there are actually a lot of things going on right now with how libraries are changing the way they do ebooks. Some libraries, most public libraries have the ability to do this now, but they use a special service. There are some libraries that are now buying ebooks directly from publishers or authors and providing their own service. And that's sort of a new thing. There are some libraries out in Colorado that are doing it. But there are also other services you can do as a self-published author. Amazon Prime, for example, you can borrow books from them. There's another service called Safari Books Online, and those function sort of on a Netflix model where you have a subscription and then you're able to sort of rent or download books for a specific period of time. And so there are a lot of ways to get those books out there, and public libraries are great. And
I have one question, though. I have a question. It's important.
Okay.
Do you think that the ebooks will make print books obsolete?
Absolutely no. I do think that there are some forms of books that are better served by an e-version. And I'm talking about like mass market paperbacks, the people that are reading 3 or 5 books a week, those people that are so voracious that they need the books now. I think it's a disservice to our natural resources to just be pulping these books constantly. So I think that there will be a shift in what we read digitally and what we don't. But this question always reminds me of Victor Hugo wrote Hunchback of Notre Dame back in the 1830s, and he has this whole chapter about how the printing press is going to destroy architecture, that no one's ever going to build beautiful buildings anymore because now they're just going to be at home reading and wasting their brains. And I think it's the same kind of thing where we're so afraid of this new technology, but we need to remember that a book is the artifact, as the printed thing is a piece of art, and it's something different than getting your information from an ebook.
It's like almost what I've learned as a publisher is that the printed book is like a vinyl record, and then the ebook is like the digital file or whatever. They're just a different product. And they
you can write in the margins, and you can hand it to a friend, and you can smell the paper, and you know all those things that we really want, and that's never going to go
away. Snuggle with it.
Yeah.
Just snuggle with the file. I'm just saying. So, Amanda, how can people find the Digital Bondry? I just have to put a little shout out, though. I worked with the Digital Bondry to get Poor Free put into a digital file so students, like History of Science students, could afford it. It's now $6.99. But you guys were amazing. You were quick. You knew your stuff. You were kind. You supported my vision.
Well, thank you. We have our website. It's digitalbindery.com. And we are happy to, you know, work with you, even if it's just answering some questions. I know this is kind of a scary time in publishing to try to figure out, should I even go digital? And we're happy to have those conversations. Those are fun for us.
Nick, do you have any questions for Amanda?
I do, but none that I would sort of lay out now because they would take up too much time. But I definitely will be getting in touch with Amanda.
Yeah, you can send us an email. Our email address is info@digitalbindery.com, or you can email me directly. I'm Amanda@digitalbindery.com.
Well, Amanda, thank you so much. I love a good Leo.
Oh, well, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no, really. And I can't wait to work further with you guys, because one of the things that I'll mention before we go to the break is that one cool thing about ebooks also is that they can be multimedia. And with astrological. I initially contacted you guys because of astrological remediation, because there was actual projects made, you know, artists made music and stuff. And so that's possible to render that digitally, right?
Yeah. We've done a bunch of projects that are just really exciting and I think really help reach a wider audience. And I think that's one of the exciting things about digital publishing is that, you know, not only are there are more opportunities for accessibility for people with print disabilities, but also people who are used to now reading on the internet and want more of that multimedia experience.
Right. And one thing Tom was saying was that people who have low vision or whatever, ebooks are great because they can make the words really big.
Yeah. And, you know, as I was doing research for a digital publishing class I was teaching, I found a statistic that 1 in 10 people in the world have some form of dyslexia. And so being able to control your own reading environment is really important with that kind of thing. And that's something that I'm personally really passionate about, is making these books accessible to everyone, because it's information and it should be available.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Amanda. We're going to go on break, but I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, well, have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you, Amanda.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, stay tuned for the water push where we get emotional.
The Seventh Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
Within each of us is an inexhaustible source of wisdom aligned with the natural world, with the potential to connect us to the sacred dimensions of life and to guide us to our own highest potential. This source of wisdom is known as self, soul, and consciousness. Every week, host Ray Nobrega guides us on an exploration of our relationship with the natural world through the lens of the shamanic arts. Restoring and deepening our connection with the natural world ignites the spirit within us. Tune in to Self, Soul, and Consciousness, Thursdays at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? How do I get there? If you're searching for the answers to these and other spiritual questions, you can look within. And you can tune into The Open Door. Our program will expand your awareness of the teachings of the Ascended Masters, offer you practical tools that promote self-mastery and personal freedom, and provide an unerring pathway for graduating from Earth Schoolroom. The Open Door, with host Tom Schumacher and Terry Kennedy, is broadcast live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
The Mayan calendar tells us that we will be entering into a 260-day opportunity for us to engage in conscious co-creation with Great Spirit. How do we prepare ourselves for this exciting and unprecedented time in Earth's history? Peter Tung has dedicated over 20 years of his life's work to exploring that which is beyond understanding. Peter will help increase your awareness and education on this enlightening transformation in consciousness. Awakening to Conscious Co-Creation airs live Wednesdays at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on 7th Wave Network. Invite meaning and inspiration to your life. This is the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
You're enjoying Andrea Garrett's Astrological Detective. Got a question or comment? Maybe a story to share? Call in to 1-866-472-5795. Again, that's 1-866-472-5795. Or send an email to theastrologicaldetective@gmail.com. Now, on with the show.
Surprise! I have a surprise for you, Nick.
Oh, boy. I love surprises.
Okay, guess what's going to happen? This is the last show. Do you know that?
Right.
Of the whole Astrological Detective. I think I made 24 shows. Well,
wow.
We made...
That's like two zodiac signs.
I know! It's like there's a lot of shows, and a lot of people were on the show, and every guest was phenomenal. I just have to say thank you to every guest that's at the show, including you.
Okay. I'll try not to blow it in these last 15 minutes.
And also, I want to thank everyone at Voice America, because you know why? They are actually another sponsor for this show, because they gave us this show. You want to know why?
Why?
Because on one show, there was a technological much. And so they said, oh, we're very sorry. Here's an extra show, which is so kind of them. But you know what? The glitch? A transit to Uranus, and I'm not making this up. Because, because you know how Uranus and Pluto are square right now? And then the inner planets will trigger an outer configuration, right?
Sure, yes.
It was when Mars was there opposing it, and the moon was there at the So I know it was caused by that. And, of course, it perverted the normal way things go, and they couldn't record for some reason.
Uh-huh.
But then they gave me the show. It was so funny, and it was happened to be the Uranus show. So I thought the irony.
It's beautiful. I love irony. It's people ask me, Nick, why do you study astrology? I study astrology. I use it as a tool to study history. Well, Nick, why do you study history? For the irony. That's it. That's what it's all about for me.
Coin a phrase like astral irony, because that's why I keep watching astrology. It's like I can never believe how exact the transits manifest, like even on a subtle. I'm just like, what? Come on.
Yeah. I have to agree. Sometimes they're just so literal that you think, well, that was almost too obvious to even suspect as an outcome for a transit. So yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And Kenneth's like, I think you literalized it somehow. You know what? I asked myself that question. And time I've been surprised at how it's not me doing it. And then you witness. You said that's styles. You do a lot of witnessing instead of.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a watcher. I think of myself very much as a watcher.
So I have to ask you a question.
This might be a little surprising that I'm going to ask you this. But do you remember at UAC? Do you remember my girlfriend, Ash?
I sure do.
Phenomenal astrologer. And I have to tell you that we broke up under the influence of Uranus. Really?
Uh-oh.
And I'm telling you, because Uranus is a Venus, and it's opposed to Mercury, or it opposed to Mercury, which fills her seventh house of the Pope. And I know it's that because it was when, you remember when Jupiter and Uranus and Mars were all configured to each other?
Yeah.
And she left. And I was like, Uranus surprised me again. I did not see that coming.
And people, wow.
People are like, didn't you see it coming? I was like, I did not see that coming. But I'm an astrologer and I understand what Uranus does. I wasn't I was like, okay, this is how it's going to go. Does that make sense?
Well, that makes sense. What degree is your Libra sun?
My 29 Libra.
Okay, so you still have a while before you actually get the opposition transit. So you still have more lovers ahead to leave you.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, there's going to be lovers all throughout the line leaving me, I probably.
Yeah. They'll be coming and going.
Yeah. But hey, I have a song for this is for the last show, and it's for Ash. It's for everything that's happened under Uranus. And it's, we need to kind of commemorate the last show with a little music, I think. Cause it's kind of a sentimental thing to me. I love. So,
yeah, I sure do.
I saw him in concert once. I was in the third row and I cried. I love him.
He's a Libra just like you. And I think he started recording his first album when transiting Uranus was conjunct his sun or his moon. I believe his sun in Libra.
Really interesting. You know, I looked at his chart and I couldn't believe how similar it was to my. He's a Gemini rising and
right.
He has Libra in the fifth like I do. And I was like, no wonder I like him so much, you know.
Yeah.
So my friend Haley, who was on the initial Uranus show like months ago, she sang with me on this. And I said, I'm not a singer, but I did want to sing it out. So here we go. Here's Independence. Yeah, hold on. Angela wants to come up too. Angela, come on up. It's the last show, baby. You want to say anything to the listeners? I think so. Hurry it up, Cookie. Do you want to listen to the music? Here we go.
It's taking way too long for you to finish your radio show. Change anything now.
And that was the end. Do you want to say?
Well, yeah.
Goodbye.
Oh, you're so beautiful. Hey, Nick, thank you so much. Where can people find you, Nick, on the...
Well, they can find me. I will be launching a website soon, nickdagenbest.com. I'm just putting together some content to launch that new site. So for the time being, they can't find me anywhere, but soon they will find me everywhere.
I will find you.
Find me.
I will. Hey, Nick, thank you so much. I can't.
Thank you, Andy.
Yeah. Hey, Angeline, what do you have to say? One more thing. You want to hug the microphone? Okay.
Aww.
Thank you, radio.
Microphones are people, too.
Thank you to everyone who's been listening, and thank you to everyone else. And if you want these podcasts, please download them off iTunes within the next week, because they will disappear after that and come back in 3D. Real. So visit the MoiraPress.org, where I will be rendering these for the deaf community, but they will be also accessible for hearing people, because you'll be hearing the radio show also underneath. But, yeah. All right, Nick. Well, I'll see you soon. And
all right.
And Voice America, have a good rest of your life.
Goodbye, VOA.
Thanks so much for listening. Next week, Andrea Garrett's Astrological Detective will return with an all-new program and more fun. Be here next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. And for more about Andrea Garrett's, visit her website at moirapress.org. That's M-O-I-R-A-Press.org.